Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Ana Mateo.
And I'm Mario Ritter in Washington. On today's program, we talk about tattoos, in particular, tattoos in the workplace.
In the 1960s U.S., a tattoo was usually a sign of antisocial or illegal activity. Few people had them. Today, at least 1 in 5 Americans has a tattoo, including sports stars, actors, and young professionals.
But some people say tattoos still have no place at work. Many well-known companies have no visible tattoo policies.
However, some industries are not so strict when it comes to tattoos, and some are changing to reflect a more tat-friendly culture.
During any workday commute in Washington, D.C., you will see people dressed in different kinds of business clothes. Suits, brown khaki pants and collared shirts, modest dresses and skirts. D.C. has a large government workforce, along with many politicians and lawyers. As a result, most people dress in a conservative way.
On a crowded subway train one morning, a young woman stands out. She is wearing shorts and a tank top. However, it is not her clothes that make her look different from her fellow commuters. It's her arm. She has a large, brightly colored tattoo of a beautiful woman with long dark hair wearing a red scarf and jewels. The tattoo covers the top of her left arm.
Her name is Erin DeRosa. She is a 26-year-old hairstylist. Miss DeRosa says her college friends warned her to not get such large tattoos. They told her the tattoos, or tats for short, would make it hard for her to get a job.
Not so, says Ms. DeRosa. She says the hair industry puts importance on creativity and individuality. So showing her tattoos actually helps her career. She says that her clients do not get freaked out or are not upset by her tattoos. She says that her salon is a modern one, suggesting that perhaps in a more conservative salon, customers might be freaked out by her tattoos.
Her mother, however, is a different story. Her mother does not like tattoos.
Ms. DeRosa says when her mom came to D.C. for a visit, she had to wear long sleeves the entire time. After a short break, we will hear more from the hiring expert about how different industries view body art and how tattoo culture at work is changing.
Welcome back to As It Is. We continue with our story today on tattoos in the workplace. Erin DeRosa belongs to a creative industry that accepts tattoos in the workplace. Fashion, graphic design, and technology industries are also lax or not strict about workers having tattoos. But industries such as medical and financial are more traditional about workers' appearance.
These observations are from Natasha Olinger, a human resource, or hiring, specialist. Ms. Olinger has been an HR specialist in Washington, D.C. for the past decade.
So I think the industries that are more lax now are the tech and creative industries, but the ones that are still kind of strict are the medical professions, the legal professions, and banks.
The stricter industries, explains Ms. Olinger, are mostly what she calls customer-facing. People in medicine, law, and finance must deal with the public face-to-face. If an employee represents a company, that company usually has a right to say how their employees should look.
Many jobs in the technology industry are not customer-facing. They are back-end jobs and have little face-to-face time with customers. So appearance is not as important.
The tech industry is where a woman named Melissa Thomas has worked for the past 20 years. Ms. Thomas is a 47-year-old self-employed technology expert. She mainly works with the federal government, supporting its software needs.
Ms. Thomas got a small tattoo when she was in her 20s, even though her father opposed the idea. But when Ms. Thomas turned 40, she decided it was time to get the tattoos she has always wanted. A lot of them.
Ms. Thomas explains she chose tattoo designs that are important to her in some way. She says she loves Japanese culture. So one of her arms has a full sleeve of brightly colored Japanese-looking tattoos. Her other arm is a work in progress. She says the tattoos are incomplete because her favorite artist started taking drugs again. She did not want drugs connected to her body art, so she stopped going to him. This is actually one of the common opinions people have about tattoos, that the people who have them take drugs.
Ms. Thomas was thoughtful not only about the content, but also the location of her tattoos. She explains that she stopped the tattoos at her wrists so she can hide them, all of them, when she needs to or wants to.
In 2011, the career advice website CareerBuilder.com conducted a survey. They hired the company Harris Interactive to poll nearly 3,000 hiring managers across the U.S. These managers were asked to list the factors that kept them from promoting their employees. The top three were piercings, bad breath, and visible tattoos.
As HR expert Natasha Olinger points out, employees do not have to care about an employee's right to express oneself through body art.
In other words, no U.S. law restricts someone from getting a tattoo, but no U.S. law requires a business to hire a person with a tattoo either.
On the other hand, deciding not to hire people with tattoos may increasingly cost employers workers. In the U.S., nearly 4 in 10 millennials, people aged 18 to 29, have at least one tattoo. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Mario Ritter. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
And now, Words and Their Stories, a VOA Learning English program about American expressions. When you are learning a language, context is everything. Here, context means the words around another word or phrase that help explain what the sentence is saying. And context is even more important for a certain group of words. Words that are their own opposites. A word with opposing meanings is called a contronym, or contronym, spelled with an A. These words also go by the more romantic term, Janus words. Janus is the Roman god of beginnings and endings. He is often shown with two faces looking in opposite directions. So what are these Janus words? Some are very common, like the word off. If you turn off a device or light, you deactivate it. But if you say a device went off, you mean it was activated. Here's an example using a car alarm. Imagine, it's late at night. Your neighbor's car alarm starts making a loud noise. The noise wakes you up. So you go to your neighbor's apartment to tell him, "Hey! Hey, wake up! Your car alarm is going off! Turn it off before it wakes up the whole neighborhood!" The word left is another example of a contronym. Left can mean either to depart from a place or to remain in a place. For example, the women left the dinner party to sit outside. The guys were left in the kitchen to clean up. Here, the women departed the party, leaving the men to remain in the kitchen. I really like that example. Here are some examples of contronyms from the world of farming. If you seed a tomato or cucumber, you remove the seeds. But if you seed a field, you put seeds in a field to grow. Dust is another word that requires some context for understanding. Dust as a noun means fine particles of something, such as dirt or ash. Dust as a verb can mean either to add or to remove those fine particles. So if you are cleaning a house, you can dust furniture by removing dirt. Or if you are farming, you can dust crops by adding anti-insect dust, usually by airplane. Context is everything. Another common word is fast. Fast can mean something is moving quickly. She is running fast. But fast can also mean something is fixed and unmoving. For instance, if colors are fast, they will not run when you get them wet. Here's another example. Hold fast to your beliefs. Don't change them simply because they are unpopular at the moment. Another contronym is the word screen. Screen can mean both to show and to hide. You invite many families to your house for the screening of your new film. You can't wait for them to see it. But when the film shows a violent image, you hold your hands over the children's eyes and screen their view. Also, if you are screening candidates for a job, you are choosing not to see some of them. We also say we are screening phone calls if we are choosing to answer some but not others. Yet many of us look at a computer screen every day to see pictures, get information, and of course, check VOA Learning English. And that's all for this Words and Their Stories. Really, I mean it. There's no contronym in that sentence. I'm Anna Mateo. See ya!
I'm Doug Johnson.
And I'm Bob Doty with the VOA Special English Program, People in America. Today, we tell about a world-famous musician, Larry Adler, who played the harmonica. The harmonica, or mouth organ, is a simple musical instrument. You blow air into it, and it produces sound. Most people consider it nothing but a child's toy. Anyone can learn to play a few songs on a harmonica. It is not difficult. In the hands of Larry Adler, however, the simple harmonica became an important musical instrument.
Lawrence Cecil Adler was born February 10, 1914, in Baltimore, Maryland. Music was always very important to Larry Adler. As a child, he sang Jewish religious songs in the synagogue. He was admitted to a famous music school in Baltimore to study the piano. Larry Adler was not a student at the school for long. He was asked to leave because of a song he played at an important school performance. He was supposed to play a classical music piece. But the head teacher of the school had made the young Larry Adler angry. So he played a silly popular song called "Yes, We Have No Bananas." The head teacher became extremely angry. Larry Adler was expelled from the school.
That simple incident tells a lot about Larry Adler. He was a rebel. He did not like to follow orders from anyone. He lived his life the way he thought best. Perhaps that is why he chose a musical instrument that most people considered a toy. In fact, Larry Adler won a music contest in Baltimore playing classical music with the harmonica. He entered the contest and defeated 400 other young people by playing music written by Ludwig van Beethoven. The others played mostly simple popular songs. You must listen to his music to understand how serious an instrument the harmonica was for Larry Adler. Here he plays a popular song called "Blues in the Night."
Larry Adler ran away from home when he was 14 years old. He already knew he wanted to be a musician. He wanted to play the harmonica. He arrived in New York City and went to see the popular singer Rudy Valley. The man listened to him play. Then he said, "Save your money, because once they hear you, that is it. They will never want to hear you again." However, Rudy Valley did help Larry Adler find work. One of his first jobs was playing the harmonica for some of the first Mickey Mouse cartoons produced by Walt Disney.
As a young man, Larry Adler did not know how to read music. He could listen to a record, played a few times, and then play the song with his harmonica. He could do this with extremely difficult songs. Not being able to read music did not seem to harm his career. He was already a famous musician when a friend told him that reading music would increase his understanding of what he was playing. Larry Adler learned to read music.
Larry Adler met the famous music composer George Gershwin at a party in New York. Mr. Gershwin's famous Rhapsody in Blue was very popular. Friends asked the two men to play the famous work. At first, George Gershwin refused. He did not think a harmonica should play his beautiful song. But friends said they should play, so Mr. Gershwin agreed. When they were done, George Gershwin praised Larry Adler's playing. He said it sounded almost as if he had written Rhapsody in Blue for Mr. Adler and his harmonica.
Several years later, George Gershwin used a special device called a recording piano to play and record Rhapsody in Blue. After the famous composer's death, Larry Adler often played the harmonica with the recording piano of George Gershwin playing Rhapsody in Blue. Mr. Gershwin's sister attended one of the performances. Later, she told Mr. Adler, "I could almost see him sitting there playing the piano." Listen as Larry Adler and George Gershwin play one of the most famous pieces of American music, Rhapsody in Blue. Thank you.
Larry Adler appeared in movies, produced records, and performed around the world for many years. In 1949, he was asked to appear before a congressional committee that was investigating Americans who were members of the Communist Party. Mr. Adler was in Britain at the time. He refused to return to the United States and appear before the committee. He made his home in Britain and did not return to the United States for many years. Larry Adler was not a communist, but he could not take orders from anyone or any political party. The congressional committee had made him angry. He said later that was why he refused to appear.
In recent years, Larry Adler became famous to a new group of young people. He appeared with many famous young musicians. He also introduced the music of George Gershwin to younger audiences. Larry Adler's musical career began at the age of 14 in 1928. It ended with his death August 7th, 2001. He was 87 years old. We leave you with Larry Adler playing another of George Gershwin's famous works, I Got Rhythm.
This special English program was written and produced by Paul Thompson. I'm Doug Johnson.
And I'm Bob Doty. Join us again next week for another People in America program on The Voice of America.